Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 9:24 p.m. and that is British summertime. And today is July 20th. I flew back to Ireland today, spending about 10 days here with my family, and greatly looking forward to getting out on the lake over the weekend. I spent most of my youth either rowing or selling tours on that lake, and I'm really looking forward to sharing it with my daughters. But today was certainly a momentous day in markets, and we've had a confluence of events that are acting against some of the technology shares. It's really the bigger question is how long it's all going to last. I thought we'd kick off by looking at the most active options, and I will spend, I think, the majority of this video speaking about the overbought condition that we have on Wall Street, but then also looking at the I think what we can only think of really as the consistency that we have between the outperformance of technology relative to really just about everything else, and just how similar it looks when we compare the high growth shares versus just about any other asset class. But let's just look at the fact that the vast majority of the options that are traded are either for the SPY ETF, Tesla, or Apple. And there have been some significant drawdowns in here today. And a lot of those options are going to expire tomorrow. So let's just pick a share, and like Nvidia, and then look at the options on it. One thing that's quite clear is there's a lot of volume that's going to expire tomorrow in the 450 area. And then if we stretch out volume to just 1 month forward, well, then it collapses. If we go to September, there's basically no volume. And the further out we go, the even less there is. So the concentration of interest in 0 day options is really quite incredible. And it also means that the VIX index isn't really giving an accurate depiction of the kind of volatility that we're seeing in the markets. So then you also have the fact that the Nasdaq is going to be reweighted tomorrow. So there's bound to be some position taking around that. The concentration of weightings within the Nasdaq has certainly increased over the last year or two, with the mega caps occupying about half the index right now. So they're going to be reduced in their weightings, and that's going to go into effect on Monday. So we might just see a resetting of the valuations, and then perhaps they can start accumulating those weightings once more. But it does just beg the question, following the downward dynamics that we've seen, are we going to see some follow through over the next few days? The Nvidia chart has been putting in higher highs over the course of the last 6 weeks, and it is now coming back into the 450 area, which is the upper side of the underlying range. Now, I do not spend a lot of time looking at the RSI, but there are times when it is worth taking a peek at. And the thing that I think is most particularly interesting right now is the divergence, because we have the higher highs here on the price chart, but then we have lower highs on the RSI. Now, that kind of divergence is about the most useful way of using some of these indicators. But it's not just Nvidia. So let's look at another one of those really very large companies. And for Microsoft, it's also put in higher highs, but for the RSI, we've seen it coming down. So we have this divergence in here as well. And with the news yesterday that the popularity of ChatGPT is declining, and the rather expensive price tag that Microsoft has attached to the kinds of tools that it's developing, then we're starting to see prices coming back down. Well, then Netflix came in today with a rather disappointing earnings call, and the share has pulled back really quite violently. Now, it's worth considering that it went up from about 175 to almost 500 in the space of about a year, and now it is quite overbought and susceptible to some mean reversion. Now, of course, the thing is that it could fall at, I guess, about $80 and then only approximate the region of the 200-day and 1,000-day moving averages, and I think that that is more than likely going to be the case, that we're going to get some mean reversion in some of these bigger tech shares. And then Apple has also been putting in these higher highs and got right up to test the $200 area, and it has it has gone high enough to hit the 3 trillion market cap level. I just don't think that it's going to be capable of sustaining it. And we also have a divergence here, where the high and it was back at the beginning of the month, and we have a lower high following the higher high in the price. So these kinds of divergences generally tend to be bearish. I think that's not to labor the point too much, but just about every one of the mega cap companies has got some sort of negative RSI divergence. So the Nasdaq 100 was down 360 points in here today. It's the biggest downward dynamic we've seen in quite some time. And then when we think about the VIX index, well, the thing that was, I think, rather interesting is that it wasn't moving in a very dynamic manner in here today. And a part of the reason for that was because the Dow Jones Industrials Average was in positive territory. Now, I can't remember the last time that I saw the Dow in positive territory when the Nasdaq was in negative territory in a dynamic manner. We can see that the Dow did not hold on to the 300-point gain that it had earlier on today. But the other big question then is whether it is going to hold the breakout from what has been a really quite well-defined range. And this was a breakout to new 15-month highs. So now the next question is, are we going to see a failed break here? And if we do, well, then that is likely to bring it right back down to test the region of the 200-day moving average, which would be a decline in excess of 2,000 points. And of course, there is the additional point that some of those larger cap companies are part of the Dow Jones Industrials Average. Now, let's just look at those ratios that I was speaking about earlier on. And when we look at, for example, the Dow NASDAQ ratio, well, then we get this picture of clear underperformance for an exceptionally prolonged period of time, and only very mild rebounds from time to time. The really big pattern of outperformance was between 2002 and 2003, and of course that coincided with the collapse of the Nasdaq. But the thing that I find most particularly interesting right now is that these lows are right in the region of each other. So we had a good sized rebound in 2022 from the lows right at the end of 2021, and now we're back testing that level again. And it's interesting that today was a day where the technology sector did take a bit of a hit. So the times when we've had good sized rebounds, it's usually when the Nasdaq is rolling over rather than when the Dow is suddenly surging higher. It does also, I think, beg the question about why has technology done so much better? Why has growth done so much better? Well, it might be easy to just talk about interest rates, but interest rates have been going up, and that hasn't improved the lot of value versus growth, at least not yet. But then I think it does get to a very important point about growth, which is that lots of technology companies, their primary way of differentiating themselves is to create an efficiency, to look at a problem in the market, try and come up with a solution to it. And by coming up with a solution to it, then they're introducing greater efficiencies. And through creating efficiencies, they're basically creating something out of nothing, creating value from nowhere. And then that is attributed a rather attractive valuation. But then let's just think about how is value defined for the so-called value sector. And it's about discounted cash flows. But in order to discount cash flows, what you need is history. And of course, what that basically is implying that there is predictability. But if you're an innovative company and you're creating something out of nothing, well, then that's not predictable. That's and particularly the high growth rate, it has to be averaged out over several years. Whereas when you're talking about discounted cash flows, it's so much easier to do when you have the same cash flows every year, or that there is a very steady growth rate over time. So then, of course, what that also brings to the question is, what are the ways that companies grow? And what are the ways that economies grow? And what are the ways that those can be valued? So on the one hand, you have innovation, and that's very much part of the unpredictable growth side of the economy. Then you also have the kinds of companies that have got long established relationships and that have got a history of adopting innovation, but perhaps not so much being the founders of those innovative companies. And they're much easier to analyze, and then their cash flows are more dependable because they've got a long history of moving through business cycles. So then it would perhaps be more appropriate to talk about that the times when growth underperforms will more than likely be around times when other types of business model appreciate more. So on the one hand, you have the extractive industry, and when they start seeing prices rising for the stuff that they produce, well, then they're going to have a better growth trajectory than lots of other things. Then you have economic growth due to improved governance, and that's a very strong argument for why you should have a multiplication factor in productivity and in the stock market over time as well. But of course, that's not due to technology. Then, of course, you have the kinds of companies that can grow faster when their customers are doing well. And that's also tied into synchronized global economic expansion. So, not especially about technological innovation. And of course, we did have that in 2000, but then absolutely the NASDAQ was doing better than the Dow Jones even during that period of time. So I think that we are in a point where the growth trajectory of the growth sector is moderating at a minimum, and that is likely to contribute to value starting to appreciate once more. And I would just draw your attention to the commonality. So when we then look at the value index, well, we don't have as much history for these ETFs, but the two factors, I think this the Schwab Growth and Value ETFs, we did have a good size rebound in 2022, and it has unwound most of it, and now it's also back in the region of an historic low as well. So I think younger, at least while I've been traveling, I've been speaking with somewhat younger people than I, and they are thinking more about how to deploy resources, whether it's to start a family, to build a home, start or to move house, consolidate, couples moving in together, consolidating their rent, and buying a place together. And those are very concrete moves, and I think that we are going to see more of those kinds of concrete moves right across the economy, whether it is in infrastructure development or energy infrastructure. Those will be the kinds of moves and commitments of capital that are likely over the next several years, but perhaps not quite yet because growth continues to moderate. And then I think if we look at the ex US relative to the US, which would be also looking at, for example, EAFE versus the USA, well, then we get almost exactly the same chart pattern, that we have this incredibly prolonged pattern of underperformance, and then we get a good sized rebound. And this is coming after an exceptionally lengthy period of underperformance of the ex-US markets relative to the US markets. It's too early to say, considering the kind of pullback we've seen to date, that the lows are in fact in. And it's going to, I think, necessarily require that the US markets roll over relative to the rest of the world in order to turn this ratio around in a conclusive manner. Now let's think about the bond markets, because the 10-year yield was up about 10 basis points in here today. So it has steadied in the region of the 200-day moving average, and that has now broken the very short-term downtrend. So it is beginning to look like perhaps we're seeing a pattern of higher reaction lows here, and we may then see that yields will pop on the upside and in fact go on to test the at the higher levels overall. We might even see that yields pushing on to new highs. Unemployment, or I guess jobless gains, were lower than expected in here today. And that is one of the reasons why bond yields are higher, because investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the possibility that interest rates might in fact go higher from here, not just once, but perhaps even twice. So with a somewhat higher a government bond yield, gold prices were a little bit softer in here today, down about $7, and reversing an earlier decline, so failing to push back above the 2000 level, I think would perhaps be the most accurate way to describe today's action. We could easily see some consolidation around or in between the 1900 and 2000 levels. I don't think we're going to see much more than that, because if we do see weaker technology earnings, then that's going to have a knock-on effect on in the economy overall. Now, if we're starting to see the Wall Street starting to roll over, then let's just look at how some of those futures are doing right around the world. So, with the Nasdaq 100 down 2%, Asia looks like it's going to open in negative territory in here today. And of course, the story out of China continues to be one where they're not actively pulling the trigger on additional new stimulus. So the CSI 300 was in negative territory in here today, and it could easily drop down from here. And I think the easiest way to monitor that performance is going to be with the copper price. And copper failed to hold onto its advance in here today. I remain of the view that this is a medium-term top formation completion, where we've had a massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend and a period of right-hand extension, and that the next move is a next significant move is likely to be on the downside. We're still in an interesting environment for oil prices, where the price has been exceptionally inert and getting right up to test the region of the 200-day moving average. It was pretty much unchanged in here today, and it's going to have to sustain a move up through that 200-day moving average in order to confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. So, if we're going to see the leading stock market of the world rolling over, I think that we have to pay attention to the Wall Street leash effect. And the USA is far and away the most significant of all the global markets. And if the Nasdaq rolls over, then it's going to have a knock-on effect elsewhere. Now, we've seen very strong performance, for example, in several of the emerging markets, in India in particular. And the Indian market was in additional new positive territory in here today and testing the big psychological 20,000 level. It's not at all beyond the bounds possibility that we get a pause in consolidation, but the fact is that India is benefiting enormously from its position as the counterbalance to China's moves to become the hegemon. and it's basically being sponsored by NATO in order to take on that position. So that is certainly one of the factors that is helping it to pop on the upside. But then let's also continue to pay attention to some of these European markets. And the FTSE 250 was up in a very dynamic manner yesterday and then didn't quite capitalize upon it in here today. But certainly that is a good sized rebound from the 18,000 level. And I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional higher lateral arranging provided it holds the lows from last week. But certainly it looks like some consolidation. I think it's just worth also thinking for a moment about the strike actions that are happening right now. And I almost missed my flight from the UK to Ireland today because of the tube strike and because of the railway strike. And these kinds of events are certainly hitting home to consumers. You also have doctors that are striking. And everybody wants more money. But in order to get inflation under control, governments don't have a lot of choice. But one of the biggest factors that is contributing to that is that food prices are rising. And with the rising cost of living, where the occupancy rates for rentals are quite high, but there's not a lot of new supply coming to market just yet, then that's obviously putting pressure. Now, the wheat price rallied yesterday and is putting in a higher reaction low. It does look quite likely that wheat is going to improve upon this performance. And then, of course, we have sugar. And sugar is a vital condiment, but it's also the feedstock for ethanol in Brazil. And the price is now firming from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's approaching the peaks from back in 2009 through 11. So I think the one thing we can also say is that it's looking a bit better supported on this occasion than it was back in or following the initial run higher in 2009. Ultimately, this is also going to create an argument about the rationale for using food commodities in biofuels, and there will be a humanism argument if the sugar price continues to march higher from here. Then, of course, there is the additional point that the dollar is steadying right now, but the trend is downwards. Ultimately, it's looking increasingly likely that there will have to be some kind of support provided to the economy when it slows down, and that will be dollar bearish. But with yields higher today, that is helping support the dollar in the very short term. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.